Welcome to the show. On today's episode, we have Dr. Maria Castillo Catonia. She is an internal medicine physician at Northern Virginia Family Practice Associates. She offers full-service concierge healthcare in Northern Virginia and Washington, D.C. She's passionate about blending physical and emotional wellness. She specializes in nutrition, hypertension, obesity, and mood disorders. She is currently training for a certificate in culinary medicine. In this episode, we talk about misleading TikTok advice, what is the real Mediterranean diet, and how to create a healthy eating plan for your family. This is a great episode. Please enjoy. Hi, Maria. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Hi, Kat. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Today, we're going to be discussing the benefits of and dispelling myths on the Mediterranean diet. So I'm very excited to talk about that. But before we get into this topic, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey?
Sure. Like you said, my name is Maria. I go by Christy Castillo Catoni. I am an internal medicine trained and board certified physician here in Alexandria, Virginia, shortly in Washington, D.C. I've been in practice for a little bit over 9 years, and some of my passions and interests do revolve around healthy eating, weight management, lifestyle changes are things that I like to talk to my patients every day. And I'm excited to talk about this topic. It's near and dear to my heart.
I saw that you were into culinary medicine, and I have never heard about this term before. Could you tell us some more about it? Is this a new field? How is it different from, say, a dietitian?
Yeah, so it's very different than a dietitian. It was developed not too long ago. It's mostly used by physicians. It's now being taught in certain medical schools. And culinary medicine, because it's you learn about ways to prepare foods, to teach your patients to prepare foods, target it to their health conditions, if high blood pressure, diabetes. When I went to medical school back in 2004 to 2008, you really don't get much of any training on nutrition, much less on how to prepare meals targeted for certain conditions. And culinary medicine was developed by a physician who happens to also be trained as a chef. And he came together with this concept. And like I said, now medical students are at some medical schools are being trained on this. I am very early on in my journey and getting trained for this. There is a certification that you take at the end of it, but I think it'll be so useful. And I love cooking myself. And it's just within the last 5 to 10 years that I've started to develop a passion to cook more healthy but savory meals and tasty meals. So I feel like this is going to be a great opportunity to educate myself and bring this to my patients.
If you had to define it, how would you define the Mediterranean diet?
The word diet always gets me a little on edge, if you so will, because there's a lot of stigma behind the word diet. So we'll call it a way of eating. But the Mediterranean diet is, I would say, it's more part of a lifestyle, right? The way we started to, here in the United States, learn about the Mediterranean diet was around the 1960s, where we started to observe patterns of eating and lifestyle in Mediterranean countries like Spain and Italy, France. Now, even ways of eating in Turkey and the Balkans have been incorporating, but it's a way of life. And within that, there is a way of living. I'm glad to dig a little more into what composes part of the Mediterranean diet, if you feel like it's a good time to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So essentially, if the food pyramid has been out of use for in the 1990s, the traditional food pyramid, but if you would look at a pyramid at the base of the bulk of what's the Mediterranean diet is a lot of vegetables and fruit, but a lot of vegetables. We also incorporate in there legumes, beans. If you go a little bit further up, then you get your animal proteins and proteins heavy on the fish, perhaps some poultry, virtually little or no red meat. And then above that, you do get together extra virgin olive oil is really what's recommended. You have that. And then at the very top, you have your kind of your more complex carbohydrates. And we try to stick with whole grains for that. Very little simple carbohydrates, like what you would in the traditional desserts and sweets that we use here in the United States.
I know that you're big into avoiding misinformation online, especially TikTok and all those where people give advice and maybe it's not accurate. So when they're putting Mediterranean way of eating recipes and advice online, what have you seen that clearly does not constitute Mediterranean?
I mean, and I'll tell you what many people think of the Mediterranean diet. They think it's having red wine every day. And sure, I mean, part of it can be a glass of red wine a few days a week. If you have certain health conditions, you probably should really minimize alcohol altogether. But people think it's going for the bottle of red wine, pouring extra virgin olive oil on pretty much anything. And they think that's, you know, you're following the Mediterranean diet, putting olive oil, extra virgin olive oil on a slice of white bread. And that really isn't it. Though extra virgin olive oil does form part of the Mediterranean diet, it's really the bulk of the vegetables, the fruits, the anti-inflammatory properties of omega, if you will, in fish. That's really the big bulk of the Mediterranean diet. So misinformation, yeah, when you're thinking, yeah, I'm eating Mediterranean, I'm going to have 2 glasses of wine every day together with my regular white processed pasta and my steak, that really isn't following the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I've seen that online quite a bit. I've been told myself that I should go on the Mediterranean diet, that it's super healthy because I have high cortisol and I'm more like adrenal type, hormonal imbalance type of person. But I'm having a hard time between paleo and Mediterranean. So what are some key differences between these ways of eating?
That's a great question because they do have some similarities in there. I may not be able to completely answer this question for you. I think in paleo, you probably do get even less of the kind of whole grain component of it, whole grain bread. And so the little that I do know in folks for like PCOS, I think paleo is sometimes recommended more for patients with PCOS. They do have similarities. I think the component of whole grains might be something that may differentiate them. But that's something that I'm not an expert on differentiating or differences between the two diets, if you will.
Okay, no problem. What are some Mediterranean recipes that are healthy? You don't have to say anything too complicated, but anything that would come up that you'd think of.
Yeah, I love that question because when you think about where the Mediterranean diet came from and you look at their way of living, for example, if you were to spend some time in Spain, they are very much going back to this lifestyle. They are very much about going out and shopping maybe every couple of days. They don't keep a Costco stash at their homes. Many of them do. The society's changing, but many of them don't. And so they go out and they buy what's fresh in the markets. And it isn't horribly expensive, as particularly in the smaller towns. And so you go out, you buy what's fresh and local, and then you cook it quickly. You take a vegetable, for example, put a little bit of olive oil, roast it, or put it in a pan, garlic. And so it's very simple, but it's very savory. It uses a lot of spices and herbs to flavor their foods. And so I would say something really easy and simple to do that I'll do on a crazy night at home is I'll grab some zucchini, some yellow squash, red onion, and I'll chop them up. I'll make a little blend of extra virgin olive oil, maybe some balsamic vinegar, garlic, a little bit salt, pepper. I like to put some thyme in there and then mix it in a bowl with your vegetables. You can even put small tomatoes in there, throw them in the oven and roast them. And it really makes for a tasty meal. And I'm not going to say that portion control isn't important in the Mediterranean diet because it is, but you can really be much more liberal on your portions with vegetables. And then you can take fish, for example, cod, a little bit salt, pepper, maybe even a little bit of olive oil. You can throw that in the oven as well. And there you have the bulk of the time in making your meal is spent in the oven. You can even nowadays go to the soup groceries and buy vegetables that are chopped. So that's an easy one that I like to throw out there. Most of us can do that. It doesn't take a whole lot of effort or time to plan.
What do you tell people that they're in the United States and they're like, I want to eat Mediterranean, but when you go over there, the food isn't as processed. It's not stored the same way. It's not packaged the same way. We have a lot more chemicals in the ground here, a lot more depleted nutrients. So what about someone who's concerned about that?
So excellent points. And that is true. And again, we get our vegetables, most of us, from the supermarket. We don't go to the local farmers market or such. But again, if we compare what we're already eating, even changing to frozen vegetables and frozen fruits is probably going to be a healthier way of eating and is probably going to help our underlying conditions much more than the diets we're already following. And then again, you can always source from your local farm if you're in an area where that can be done. CSAs are something that you can sign up for. So there are ways to go about it. And again, even if you have to do frozen fruits and vegetables because you don't have access to fresh ones or they're too expensive for you, there are still some health benefits that you can get from that.
Yeah, I heard that if you get frozen, they put it in when it's fresh and or ripe or ready to go. Whereas if you get it fresh, sometimes they have to artificially ripen it so that they can travel distance. So you're not getting as nutrient dense quality.
Yeah, I read that somewhere. I don't know the true data behind that or the evidence behind that, but I've read that as well. So yeah, that's a good tip and trick for those that really don't have access to it is go ahead and buy the frozen ones. You're still going to get some health benefits from it.
So what are some important factors to take into consideration when constructing the right healthy eating plan for you and your family?
Yeah, so many in there. I think we have to think about culture. For example, for me, I'm Puerto Rican. We are heavy on our breads and our rice and really not as heavy on vegetables and fruit. So it's taken me a process to get there. But I think you have to look at what your culture is, what your family's preferences are, and then adjust to that. We can't all eat one same diet. It's just not doable. So I think, for example, for me, something in the early days I started to do was I started to play around with something as simple as cauliflower rice and started to substitute that. We will have something that we eat a lot back home is rice and beans. And sometimes we'll make it mixed together. So I didn't like the cauliflower rice just by itself as a substitute of white rice, but I started to make it with my beans. And then we make what we call sofrito, and that's essentially all vegetables and spices. And so I started to play around with that. And I really do think your palate does change with time. Your taste buds do adjust. And so I actually started to crave a little more of a wider variety of things. And I started to substitute a little bit of my simple carbohydrates with more complex carbohydrates like sweet potato, incorporate rice less into my diet. So I think looking at what our cultural preferences are, then you have to look at what does our family life look like? How busy are we? Nowadays, there's two parents working, kids are in school. So we have to think about time too, right? And if time is a challenge, we really, you know, if we can afford to, we can buy those pre-chopped vegetables. Something I like to do is meal plan on Saturday or Sunday. I like to sit down and create a menu for the week and make the shopping list. And I'll go there latest on Sunday. And it helps me a lot. If I don't, we tend to eat more processed food. We tend to eat more. We just don't eat as well if that's something that we. So a few tips are step back, look at what your cultural preferences are. What's your situation in your family? Is there a quote unquote picky eater? And how can I work with that to even make little simple changes little by little?
So I know it's a lot harder to stay on track during times of stress, as well as some food choices can make us more likely to experience stress. But what are some ways our mental health impact our food choices?
So many different ways. Stress, for example, is a big one. So many of us, we've learned to use food as a coping mechanism for comfort, as you may. So if we're under stress or if we are going through a really hard time, we've learned to bring in food and not always healthy foods as a way to cope with what's going on. And so I think it's helpful if we can little by little, as we're grabbing something to eat, take a second to just step back and say, okay, am I hungry? Why am I eating this? Because you're right, stress, anxiety, depression, they all influence the way we eat and what we eat. So I think it's a good practice to step back and say, okay, what's behind this? Am I hungry? What am I feeling right now that's leading me to want to go ahead and grab this, whatever it is, cookie or vegetable even. So I think it's having a little bit of that curiosity to step in and look at what's behind that.
So let's talk about past experiences and food. How do childhood experiences impact food choices?
Yeah, that's a great one. Many of us will remember sitting at the table with the family and not being allowed, at least in my culture, either not being allowed to step up from the table until you're completely done, or just know you have to eat this. And so you have to finish your whole plate, even if you're full. And so that we learn that at such an early age, and our systems adapt to that. So I think that's a huge part of it. If we growing up weren't exposed to things like fruits, vegetables, our palate, our taste buds aren't adjusted to it. And so we want to be sensitive to that as we try to adjust our diet. Also, if you look back at the phenomenon of baby foods, when you look into it, baby foods were part of a whole industry. And so kids, now it's changing with the whole baby-led weaning concept, but little kids, babies were not exposed to different textures early on, like holding a piece of broccoli or holding a whole, even a whole strawberry. And so it was pureed food. And so you lose some of that exposure, even in as little as a 6-month-old, 10-month-old baby. And I think all that matters, right? When we look forward and see that we just haven't been exposed to these different foods and different textures.
We all want to be healthier and happier, but we also want to enjoy our lives and eat delicious foods that might be occasionally outside of our ideal meal plans. Do we have to give up our favorite foods in order to make healthy choices, or does it depend on the particular food in question? Like that, you should probably not eat no matter what. Or is there, do you recommend replacing like a bad food? Not a bad, there are actually some bad foods. I would say like candy would be a bad food no matter what. I wouldn't even have it at all. Mm-hmm. How would you navigate that if you have a craving for something that's not the best for you?
Yeah, I think you have to look at the individual. This is really something we have to look on a one-by-one basis, because as you said, you may already have an underlying condition, autoimmune condition, diabetes, insulin resistant, et cetera. And my answer for those folks is going to be probably different than to someone who is feeling well, has had at least a basic workup, has no known underlying conditions. I will say, try to stay away as much as possible for everyone from quote unquote candies and the processed or simple carbohydrates. I think if you have none of these underlying conditions, you could probably treat yourself, right? You know, once every couple of weeks, have in portion control, right? If you really want a cookie, or you really want a piece of a cupcake or something, it's probably okay to go ahead and treat yourself every couple of weeks to a small portion of that. In my opinion, I think that's healthy rather than overly restricting yourself. For many people, that can then eat to overindulging and then falling back on their healthier eating patterns. But then again, like you said, somebody with really poorly controlled type 2 diabetes, somebody who really has a high food sensitivity to certain things, they probably want to stay away from that altogether, and we can work on trying to find replacements for them.
Yeah, I do get that, because there's certain foods that if I eat, maybe the first time I eat it, I'm fine, but then the cravings come back and then I want to eat it over and over. And then you have to break the addiction all over again.
That's exactly, it happens to me. Yeah. I kind of gravitate and tend to really enjoy the sweets and cookies and breads and things like that. And if I do great, if I stay away from them and for a while, but then, like you said, sometimes you indulge a little bit, and it's recognizing how you work, what your triggers are, what really causes you to fall down, and making those decisions based on that. I don't think there's a one size fits all answer for that.
How can you plan for finances and budgets to make healthier choices?
Yeah, great question. I think you start off with what your true budget is. You have an amount that's what you can spend. And you go to things like frozen veggies, which are cheaper. You go to maybe incorporating more beans as a source of protein, because animal protein is so expensive. We all know that. It's gotten even worse over the last few months. Maybe you even go online, and most of us already know where they can get things at a cheaper price. I know. And you go online, and nowadays you can even find the prices of things there. So you create almost like your shopping list there. You make your menu and you make your shopping list when you go in, and that keeps you from, I'm going to grab a piece of this, I'm going to grab that. That's, I think, a good start. If you're on a really tight budget, I can't say enough, the frozen bags of fruits and vegetables are going to be a really good resource for you. Is that helpful?
Yes. And I also want to add that I noticed that sometimes they'll put seed oils, canola or soy oil in those bags, especially if pre-mixed blend. Yep. So I always tell people to make sure it's just the vegetable or the fruit or whatever.
Yep. Look at those ingredients in there. Yeah, that's entirely right.
So could you give us maybe an example? It doesn't have to be Mediterranean, but an example of your go-to healthy snack when you're feeling snacky, but you want something healthy.
Yeah, I love to make hummus. It's a little bit more tank, but I like to, there's something that feels good about it. I like to buy the garbanzo beans just in the bag. I like to let them soak overnight. I like to then put them in the boil them for an hour. So I like to throw them in the food processor with tahini and garlic and a little bit of lemon, a little bit of salt and pepper. And I like to keep that in the fridge. And then I will just, when I'm craving, and that to me is filling, and I'll grab a celery stick or I'll grab a carrot, or even I really like to buy the bags of chopped broccoli. Again, saves time for me. Grab a broccoli and just try to serve myself a portion, because I am known to just keep on going. Serve a portion and then just grab that to go. That's also pretty easy to put in a little kind of glass container and bring into work and have if I have a snack. So that's one of my favorites. I like to do that when I have the time. If I don't have the time, I'll buy, quite honestly, hummus from the grocery store. I will look at the active ingredients and try to buy the one with the least ingredients. I see when the list gets too long, there's probably more processed things in there. So that's an easy one to go. Banana to put in my bag is also easy. Again, planning. So nuts. So almonds are also a big part of the Mediterranean diet. So you can grab a few blueberries in a bag and then in a different bag, go ahead and put almonds or other nuts. Those are a great snack and they tend to fill you too. You can also grab apple. Another easy one is an apple, cut it up in slices and then take almond butter and another type of nut butter and use that as well. Again, careful with portions too. But those are a few easy ones that you can either buy already chopped or almost pre-made and you can take with you, particularly if you try to plan right the night ahead.
When you're at the grocery store, what are you paying attention? What are you trying to avoid and looking on the labels for? What's in your cart? What's never in your cart? Give us some tips.
Yeah. So like I said, I am a big fan of preparing for the group because I'm a big fan of not going to the grocery store too hungry because then I want to start grabbing all the snacks that are not the healthy snacks for me. I like to go with a list. I like to go not too hungry. And I like to, like you said, look at labels. I don't dissect the label. I really look at the length of it. I'm like, well, this thing has all these terms that I don't know, something acid or poly something. And if there's too much of that going on, I try to stay away from that. What other things? And I am a believer in balance, and I am a believer of not overly restricting myself because I know what happens. I go to it like 10 times harder. So I will allow myself to grab one or two things that maybe weren't in my planned list, but that helps keep me in check. It helps also keep me in budget because I'm not grabbing things that I wasn't planning for. And it's easy to do nowadays with things. This is not an advertising for Google Keep, but that's where I keep my things. I keep a Google Keep of my recipes and then a Google Keep of my supermarket cart. I take it with me on my phone and I'm just literally checking off the boxes as I go.
I do this thing with one of my friends. He lives in Paris. So he'll be eating lunch or whatever, and we'll be Skyping. And I'm like, okay, show me the labels for everything that you're making. And then I'll show him like the same meal, everything in the US. And I have to go organic. Everything is super clean. And then he's, this was the cheapest. This is whatever. And it's always the ingredients are five ingredients. Yep. Everything's organic. Everything is an actual food. And I'm looking at all these, even in the most expensive ones here, and they all have all this junk in it. And I'm just like, wow, so hard to be a person here.
Yeah, it's very different. It's our lifestyles. He probably day to day in his just routine, not even thinking about it, incorporates exercise, just walking. He may walk to the store. He probably takes longer to eat. He maybe sits longer at the table. I know in Spain, they do that. A meal can last, going out to dinner, 90 minutes, I think is about average over there, because you're talking. It's not just eating. It's an experience. You're bonding with your friends or your family. And then even afterwards, you might go for a stroll afterwards. So they incorporate, it's a lifestyle. It's not just what you eat, but you're right. Our ingredient lists are much longer on when we go grocery shopping.
Do you have any tips for parents teaching healthy eating to their children, young adults?
Yeah, I do. I have an 18-month-old, and that's been a big priority for me since we started introducing foods to her at 6 months. And I think is model. I think modeling behavior is so important. They really are sponges and they pick up so much from us. So model sitting at the table as much as you can every day. I know with our busy lifestyles, it's not always possible, but as much as you can, sit down at the table. Even if you could do 30 minutes, it doesn't have to be the 90 minutes. Sit down with them, model eating different foods, allow them to explore with textures, with colors. That's so important, and allow them. They're going to be okay. They innately know more than we realize. If they don't want to finish a whole meal, it's okay. Their tummy is either full or they're really not enjoying the meal. They'll eat when they're hungry. The pediatricians keep an eye on their weight, but allow them to have that autonomy to say, my tummy is full. I really don't want this. Present options. This doesn't mean that if they don't want what's on their plate, you're going to serve something completely different. If you serve chicken, serve a vegetable and maybe a whole grain, and they have a number of things to choose from. So I think it's, long story short, modeling behaviors, show them that you are eating what you'd like for them to eat. Give them, they don't like it the first time, try again, reintroduce those foods. Eventually they might say, huh, I'm going to try them. As they're older, let them help in the kitchen. That helps a ton. I've noticed with my daughter, if she initially didn't like something when I served it, if I let her help me, that means kind of touch the vegetable as I'm preparing it, let her be part of the experience. She will sometimes, as I'm preparing it, try it and put it in her mouth. So have them become part of the experience as well. Be patient and have fun with it. I think having fun is such a big part of it.
My daughter is an incredibly picky eater, but I did notice that if I make something look like sushi, even if it's like cooked meat or whatever, if I make it look like sushi, she will eat it with her little chopsticks. She loves it. She thinks she's fancy or whatever. But if it's just like regular on the plate, she's like, nah.
Absolutely. Make it fun. Make it interesting. Sometimes you can use, if there's a food they don't want to eat, you can, and some people that work with baby-led weaning will say, introduce a gateway food. So that's a food that they already enjoy that you can add to that. So if they already like peanut butter, maybe have a little peanut butter with, I don't know, the carrot or even this, probably I wouldn't do this a whole lot, but if they're very picky eaters and very into candy already, maybe use sprinkles initially as a gateway in their oatmeal. So little things like that.
And if you could tell everyone to remove one thing from their diet, what would it be?
To completely remove one thing from their diet, I would say really things like, this is tough to ask somebody to completely remove it, but things like candy, like you said, like a hard candy, if you're eating that a lot, gummy bears, I really would try to completely get away from that. There's, I dare say, no nutritional value in that.
Yeah, I feel that. I've never had candy, but
that's amazing. You've never.
Yeah. Yes. I've never had candy. I don't like it.
Your system doesn't gravitate. Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't. I like more savory things. Yeah. But my daughter, I tried to get her on the no candy thing, and she would tell the kids in school that, oh, we don't have candy. Oh, we don't. My mom doesn't buy that. We don't have money. We don't have. So then the parents would feel bad and they'd put like extra in their kids. And then I found out, I'm like, no, we have money.
This is just not good for you.
Yeah. And it's so hard. And then the teachers are like, oh, we give them a candy when they get the question. I'm like, no.
How do you feel about letting her have a little bit of that?
I don't have a choice.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, I think with restricting something, it can make it even more palatable to her. But it's a tough one because it does nothing for her. But that's funny.
Yeah. Kids are crazy, but it's fun. So is there anything that you would recommend people add to their diet or maybe to their lifestyle to improve their health?
Yeah. So let's start with diet. Adding foods that are known to have anti-inflammatory properties. So things like berries are high in antioxidants. Like I said, fish, the omegas in there do have some anti-inflammatory properties. And they're really, though you can get omegas through a supplement, there's something about whole foods, and we don't quite know why, but there's some things about whole foods that are better absorbed than when you get them out of a capsule or of a tablet. So try to incorporate some fruits, vary the colors of your foods because those colors are different minerals and vitamins. So try to introduce different colors into your diet. Have fun with it. And in terms of lifestyle, try to find a way where you can introduce movement into your day-to-day living, even if that means that it's walking, for taking from part of your lunch break and going for a walk outside. And that's probably good for your mental health too, to set away from work and take even 10 minutes and go for a walk. And maybe try to incorporate a little bit of those habits that are part of the Mediterranean lifestyle. Go for a little walk, even 5-10 minutes. The kids will probably have fun with it too. So don't set yourself up for, I didn't do the 30 minutes of exercise a day. Just move. Think about taking the stairs, walking to your car. If it's a nice day, going out for a walk, little things like that do add up and do help both your physical and your emotional health.
Yes, especially during the pandemic when my daughter was home all day, I said, we have to get sun. You're like a houseplant, so you need to walk around and get some sun every day. And she'd go, but made her do it. And I think we did way better because of it.
Absolutely. Yes, I agree.
So where can everybody learn more about you and work with you?
Yeah. So you can find me on the Northern Virginia Family Practice website. That's nvafamilypractice.com. You can also find me under LinkedIn, Maria Castillo. I do see patients here in Alexandria, but as of September 1st, I will be at our new office in Washington, D.C. Glad to see folks over there. And please feel free to reach out on LinkedIn or through our website.
And you don't do anything virtually at the moment, right?
We do. We do telehealth. So it is because of some legal restrictions. It has to be patients that are in DC or Virginia for me at this time. That may change with time, but we do telehealth visits. Yes.
Okay. Awesome. So I will put all of that in the show notes. And again, Maria, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kat. It's been a pleasure.
Welcome to the Kat Kativi podcast, your source for all things health, happiness, and beauty. I had an episode a while back with Dr. Mona Fahoum of Feminescence, and we spoke about Feminescence, Maca Harmony, and their Maca products. And if you're a woman who's ever had hormonal imbalances, if you're trying to come off the birth control pill, or even if you're going through menopause, this is a natural way to help ease that transition and to help balance your hormones. There's nothing quite like it, so go to feminescence.com, enter code KAT15, KAT15, for 15% off any of their single pack products, and definitely go check out the episode. Just search for Mona Fahoum on my podcast and listen. You won't regret it. Thank you for listening to the episode. If you made it this far, I'm sure you found some benefit to the hard work that I put into the show. Show your support by subscribing to the podcast, leave me a voicemail question, or email me at thehealthfulgypsy@gmail.com. I would love, love, love to hear from you. Be sure to join the Facebook group. You can find all that information in the show notes and my website, katkativi.com. This podcast is for informational, merrymaking, and metaphysical purposes only. Statements and views are not medical advice. This podcast, including Kat Kativi, disclaim any adverse effects by the use of information you may have heard. Opinions of guests are totally their own. This podcast does not endorse statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications, credibilities, or sanity. Individuals may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to on the podcast. If you think you have a medical problem, consult with a licensed medical physician, not just the spirit of your ancestors while on ayahuasca.